Whenever you're ready, Mr. Weaver.
Thank you, Your Honor. Tom Weaver on behalf of Relators, Johnson & Johnson & Johnson & Johnson Consumer, Inc. I'll do my best to give Mr. Robertson something else to say. Addressing some of the questions that have been raised, Judge Breckenridge, we do cite in our case, in our brief, there are no Missouri cases that we've found, but there are federal cases that we cite in the brief addressing the analog rule, holding essentially that 5206 applies in circumstances other than misjoinder, when in fact joinder has been found to be proper. So there is precedent for that. And the only case that is cited by the plaintiff, which is the Blonde case, is from, I think, in the 1970s, before 508.012, and addressed a completely different circumstance, where, it was a single claim against multiple defendants, and what do you do? Can you dismiss those claims? So it was addressing a different issue. Judge Stith, you asked the question about what happens if the anchor plaintiff, and the city venue plaintiff, who has been joined solely to tie all the other cases to the city, if that case gets set for separate trial. Well, what happens is, in fact, that those cases, those city plaintiffs, get put to the back of the line. Not only do these cases fill the city courts with claims of non-resident plaintiffs or plaintiffs from venues other than the city, but the one city plaintiff gets added has to sit around and wait out of fear that if that case is tried and goes away, then the venue for the other cases is lost. Judge Wilson, with regard to the fact that Judge Burleson talked about his desire to try to come up with a way to try more than one case, again, that is a separate issue from the question of the effect of having set the Blaze case for a separate trial. What happens when he's decided, as to Blaze, there are no greater efficiencies to be gained by keeping this claim joint. I'm setting it off for a separate trial. His comment about trying to find a reason to have multi-plaintiff trials has nothing to do with that analysis. I'm not going to tell you what you meant by each. I don't know. But the logic of the rationale for the concurrence opinion applies whenever the judge decides I'm going to set a case separately for trial. He's made a conclusion that as to that case, there are no further purposes to be served by joinder. And his discussion in the full transcript that we provided from a May 2016 hearing, after which there were three more separate individual plaintiff trials, his rationale wasn't, we want to have another trial to try to evaluate what the common issues might be or how we might promote efficiencies in the remaining cases. His point is simply, I've got 800 cases here. We've got to push these cases through, and we'll try to accomplish that by trying multiple claims at one time. Now, if we had taken the position that severing the Blaze claim required a reassessment under 508.012 of the remaining claims that were still together, then there might be some argument there that, wait a minute, he hasn't decided to try every claim separately.
Mr. is your analysis that the trial court abused its discretion in not severing the case based simply on the issue of venue? If venue wasn't a difference, if you didn't have an argument that venue requires the case to be tried somewhere else, would your analysis that the trial court abused its discretion stand?
Well, certainly the core of our argument about the abuse of discretion is you have multiple independent plaintiffs' claims that have been joined. We don't think properly joined, and that joinder has been used to create venue.
But your argument is any time there is a trial judge that orders a plaintiff's claim to be tried separately, there are no more efficiencies that are served by leaving them in the same case. So it appears, and I'm trying to see if I misunderstand, that every time a judge would decide to claim need to be tried separately, that judge had to sever that claim. What am I missing?
Well, the discretion might be broader in that context here, and if there's an inability, I think, to show that there is some prejudice resulting from continuing to have that claim joined. But what we have, I mean, what we're dealing with here, and I'd like to focus on the Blaze claim, is, yes, a component of our argument is, in fact, there is prejudice resulting from Blaze, where there is, everybody agrees, three defendants. Venue is in St. Louis County as to all of the defendants. There's no dispute. It's undeniable that the only reason the Blaze claim is pending in the city of St. Louis is because it has been joined with other independent separate plaintiff claims.
And so again, that goes to my question. You're asking us to interpret the procedural rules a separate way because there is a venue question.
In this context, yes, Your Honor. And I don't know that I'm asking you to interpret them in a different way. The rules contemplate, and again, the rules contemplate both 5205 and 5206. 5205, there are cases, again, federal cases, interpreting the analog to 5205 that apply that rule involve severance. There are 5206, which specifically refers to severance. Is applied in cases when joinder has been found to be proper. So it's consistent. The relief that we're asking for and the interpretation of the rules and the statute is consistent with the language and the intent.
I think you're saying rules. You can't decide it out of context. The only reason joinder was proper was because of the efficiencies of the commonality, determining the common issues in all the cases, and once they're separated, then the reason for joinder disappears. In some other case, it might not.
That's correct. There might be situations when a separate trial doesn't necessarily indicate that the efficiencies no longer exist.
Who moved for Blaze to be tried separately? Was that one of the parties, or was that on the court's own decision?
The sequence of that, the judge had. Judge Burleson, again, has been pushing these cases, trying as many as he can, not to generate efficiencies, except if efficiency included, let's process these cases as quickly as we can, because they have a backlog in there. And he had an October setting that was open. And basically, his situation was that Blaze had been put forward by the plaintiffs. In light of Bristol-Myers and Fox, he couldn't try any other cases because there was the question of personal jurisdiction. So Blaze was available. The plaintiff didn't want to try the city venue case. So Blaze was the other Missouri resident claim to be tried.
And the other two that were tried with Blaze, were they also Missouri residents?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
The other two that were tried with Blaze, weren't there two others?
Well, there was a trial that was begun in June of 2017 that involved Blaze joined with two non-Missouri residents. And then during the second week of that trial, the Bristol-Myers opinion came down, and the judge realized that he couldn't proceed with those trials, so he granted a mistrial. And
then are doing discovery on jurisdictional issues, but it doesn't affect Blaze because Blaze is a Missouri plaintiff,
but not
a city plaintiff.
That's correct. We do not... Emmerich still has a personal jurisdiction issue as to the Blaze case. We do not. But just reckon with regard to your question, I mean, again, the analysis is, and that if you're looking at the purpose of joinder, and again, we believe joinder was inappropriate because of the differences in the claims, but also we think it was inappropriately used to create venue over claims where venue did not lie. But the same analysis I think that you enter into is if a court's going to separate a claim for a separate trial, that severance of that claim is appropriate because it reflects.
The question is severance appropriate. Is severance required, and does the trial court abuse its discretion in not severing? So that's a pretty significant difference, isn't it?
In this case, severance is necessary because the only purpose, the effect of not allowing severance in this case is, and this is what the plaintiff is advocating, that the rules be interpreted in a way that you have a claim where everybody agrees, the plaintiff admits, that venue only lies in St. Louis County. It is joined with multiple other claims, notwithstanding the fact that the only reason it's in St. Louis City is because of joinder. And what the plaintiff is asking is that a court should have discretion to decide that that claim, the Blaze claim, is going to be set for a separate trial in a venue that everyone agrees is not the proper venue. If the court has concluded that that claim is ready for a separate trial under the analysis in the concurrence of Barron, that claim needs to be severed so that case can be tried, that claim can be tried in the only venue that everyone agrees is appropriate. And the analysis in the Barron concurrence.
Let me ask you a question. Assume this is a two plaintiff case, and you have Blaze and you have one of the St. Louis City Circuit plaintiffs, and the judge decides to try them both together in the circuit, the city of St. Louis. Is venue proper?
No. The venue needs to be, you cannot create venue over the non-city plaintiff, non-city, the St. Louis County.
In your view, that would be an abuse of discretion to even go forward in a two-plaintiff case where there were all common issues except for one of them lived across the county line from the other.
You have to, if there is no venue, if there isn't venue over both of those claims,
We're back to the question, when do we determine venue? This is a two-count, two-plaintiff case, one in the city, one in the county. Injuries, everything else is the same. Liability issues the same. You don't think you could try those two cases in the city, which means you couldn't try them in the county either.
Right. They have to be tried separately.
I mean, at least I know in Mr. Price's brief, he had two separate arguments. One was 5101, venue, you can't, joinder can't create venue, and that's what you're arguing. But I thought you also, in this case, as in that case, had the separate argument that addresses efficiencies and severance and assuming if you lost on your point that you can't use joinder to create venue, then wouldn't it be proper to try those two cases together?
And whether that falls within the scope of the rarest of circumstances that that the concurrence recognizes, certainly that would be part of that analysis.
And I think that where your argument was taking is that you may disagree with Mr. Price that that the venue is determined per count rather than per case.
Well, per claim is what the cases have recited, that you evaluate venue on a claim-by-claim, venue on a claim-by-claim basis.
So that if multiple claims were filed in multiple counts in one suit, but those claims had different venue, then that would require severance and the case is transferred.
If they set those claims for separate trial, joinder was found to be appropriate, and the court concludes that you can create joinder over, you can create venue through joinder for at least initially. Again, remember the concurrence is focusing on the need that it's appropriate to reevaluate the propriety of joinder as the case progresses, and there may be a reason to have those claims tried together, have them worked up, you have the same injuries and those types of things. And then if a decision is made to try one of them separately, and if the conclusion
my case was different. I was the trial judge who decided to try them together, and you said that's inappropriate.
Well, you have to address the impact of 5101 on that.
So back to my county line accident again. You got the multi-car accident. First injury occurs in the city. So this first injury occurs in the county. And under your view of venue, you can't join those and they can't be tried together.
Are we talking two plaintiffs or one plaintiff?
Two plaintiffs, two injuries, county line. And under your view of venue, those cases could not be filed in the same county, even though they involve the same accident, and tried in the same county.
Assuming that you couldn't bring them within the scope of the venue statutes, if you have separate plaintiffs, then you have to address what's the interplay between 5101, what's the impact of 5101 on those. 5101 says you can't extend venue through joinder.
And if we determined 5101 was not a bar to that, then could you try them together?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. Thank you.
Please, the court. I think he knows the answer, he just doesn't want to say it. The Blonde case, the only case in Missouri that's addressed this, says these words. Rule 5206 does not authorize the dropping of any party who has been properly joined under the provisions of Rule 5205. Or appeals case subject to being overruled. Secondly, venue is the key. Half the briefs here are on an issue that's outside of what the prohibition was granted for. Prohibition was granted saying that the trial court had abused its discretion not to sever. Hadn't have a thing to do with venue. That's been come up here on several occasions and to the Court of Appeals several occasions in these cases. It's all about venue, Judge Breckenridge.
Let's go back to that. I think Judge Breckenridge had a very good question. Let's change the scenario a bit. Let's say one plaintiff is tried separately, and it's not severed, as you argue, separate issues, and a judgment is rendered in favor, well, not a judgment, a verdict is rendered in favor of plaintiff. The judge, having joined these plaintiffs together, refuses to certify that for appeal and refuses to enter a judgment. Would it be abuse of discretion for that judge not to certify and enter a judgment or sever?
I say no. And I say no because the judge is left in the position to, in every circumstance, decide how to reach the goals of the rules. And in that we don't know what the rest of the facts are in your hypothetical, but in that case, it might be useful to leave that verdict sitting there and not render a judgment and do some more. I don't know. It depends on the facts of the case. But that's why discretion is so important here. And why I believe...
What if the only reason is that, hey, we join these cases together, so there's really no reason to enter separate judgments for each individual plaintiff. What if that's the only reason?
Your Honor, again, I think it goes on a case-by-case basis, and discretion of the trial court is where we ought to focus.
I think Judge Burleson actually did that as the one case where he certified it for appeal and then he took that back and said he was not going to certify it.
Your Honor, he did do that. And that's sitting in front of the Court of Appeals right now. I guess that'll make its way. Can you do that is the question. Can you take it back? But that's not here today, and assume he never did it. I still say it's within his discretion to do that, and it's not an abuse for him to do that. Judge Wilson, to your point about taking each of your children to dinner, I'm sorry I'm slow on this, but there has been a decision made as to each of your children in that circumstance individually. You may take them at once or you may take them separately, but each means that as to all, each of them individually, as to them individually, there has been some decision made. And I believe that's the usual use of the word and what I believe you surely intended when you wrote that. But you know, I don't. Again, I'm not going to go on much longer, but it's not that the venue statute no longer cares about claims. It cares about actions. The old cases are all about claims. The new cases are all about actions. And I don't think you have to get into 5101 because that's the number, 5105 perhaps. it incorporates by reference whatever action means, and 5205 defines it to include your properly joined cases. So I also, we talked about this earlier, and I won't belabor it, 508012 is a specific, there's an or there. If you take, if you sever, you take and out. You don't take or out. I believe if you're going to be true to the language of the 508012, then it that would apply, would not apply even in a severed case. Finally, I am reminded somewhere it was said that Samson slew 10,000 Philistines with the jawbone of an ass. I took that to mean he talked a lot, and I don't want to be accused of that any more than I already have been.
I have a question. The question is whether the cases can be properly joined under the current venue statute, and that it hasn't, the venue statute has not been interpreted as saying they cannot be properly joined. Is that right?
As far as I know.
And so the question is, if they are properly joined, how can they be required to be severed if they are properly joined, if venue, the venue statute allows them to be properly joined?
I don't believe they can, but I mean, I think that's the issue for the court to decide. You either have 5205 and apply it all the way through, or you don't. And that's why you all are here, and I argue one way, and Mr. Weaver and his friends have argued a different way. But I think this, as I've referred to it, this ecosystem works pretty well. And the law of unintended consequences would suggest, as Judge Powell suggested earlier, what are you going to do if you suddenly say, if any case is cut out?
The legislature could say that the venue statute trumps the joinder statute.
And it was given that opportunity in the last session and did not pass that language for reasons that don't matter.
But it has to expressly say that it is intending to supersede a Supreme Court rule for it to be effective. Is that correct?
That would be correct, and the bill would have to be limited to that purpose under the Constitution, and that's one of the mistakes they've made in the tort reform bill, is they did a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't limited and hadn't made its way to the court yet. But I think anything you do can be undone by a properly written, constitutionally true bill in the legislature. The issue here is there silence as to what happens in this circumstance? We say there is silence. This court has said silence does not create an ambiguity. You can't add the word and in between, as Professor Ochtenberg suggests. And in a moment of clarity in his law review article, he says that, you know, truth be told, I don't think that's my word, it could be argued that the venue statute doesn't even address this issue. But we think it makes sense, he says, to add the word and in between. I don't think this court's in the business of adding ands to places.
Thus far, I don't regret letting you go past your time in the previous two cases. But do you have anything new for us left on this?
I'm a judge, Chief Justice. I am only responding to a question.
No.
And,
I'm giving you a hard time just for the fun of it.
Your Honor, you have joined a group of three highly paid individuals who've been doing it all morning, and so I'm grateful. Please quash the writs, all three of them. This is not the place for the court to write a new rule. Thank you very much.
Again, the Bond case is fundamentally different. It involved one plaintiff suing multiple defendants for the same injury, and that plaintiff wanted one trial in that case. Bond might be relevant to the issue of the analysis of the defendant's objections to a multi-plaintiff trial, but it has no relevance to whether a case set for a separate trial should be severed. The court need not address the broader issue of the initial propriety of the initial joinder to make the writ permanent in this case. Just
so, and the same could be said about venue, correct? That the court doesn't need to reach the
That's correct.
Question of venue
That's correct. It's the effect of the severance and the reassessment under 508.012. The court need not address the propriety of the original joinder or the propriety of the original venue determination to make the writ permanent in this case. Again, Mr. Robertson refers to the suggestion that for some reason joinder is inviolate, that once claims are joined, that can never be undone. Not only is it permitted by the rules, 5205 and 5206, in the cases that we've cited in our brief with regard to that, but the claims are joined for a purpose. And as the Barron concurrence recognizes, that purpose may not run all the way through to trial. And it may be that joinder is appropriate for discovery, for some initial workup of the case, but when the claims are set for separate trials, and that joinder purpose is no longer applicable to the claims that are separated, then those claims should not remain part of that case, particularly if maintaining joinder on those will mean that the claim of an individual plaintiff is going to be tried in a venue where everyone agrees that venue does not lie. Finally, with regard to Rule 4103 provides that rules shall be construed to secure the just, speedy, and inexpensive determination of every action. The plaintiff brief states, joinder seeks to create as much efficiency as possible for the judiciary and the parties while preserving the rights of the parties to litigate their case without the potential prejudice to another. Well, that's exactly what the concurrence, the recognition that you reevaluate joinder, when a case is set for a separate trial, you sever that case if there's no further purposes of joinder being served. Because otherwise what you are doing is you are putting ahead the efficiencies that purportedly gained from joinder ahead of protecting the rights of the parties to litigate the case without prejudice. With regard to the Blaze writ, we ask the Blaze writ be made permanent and the court be directed to sever that case and transfer it to St. Louis County.
Could you clarify for me one last thing? What is the prejudice other? Is there prejudice other than the issue that they would be tried in a county where there would not otherwise be venue? Is the prejudice
The prejudice is that they're being tried in a venue where venue does not lie with regard to that claim. And again, that gets back to the quandary that we're in, that if we don't get these things reviewed prior to trial, we're never going to be able to show the prejudice because we'll frankly get a response like the majority in Barron, which said it's not bad enough. Well, the venue statutes have established that if a claim cannot be, it is prejudicial to try a claim in a venue where venue does not lie.
And historically, has this court and appellate courts granted, heard venue claims prior to trial and granted changes of venue
yes.
on this basis?
Yes, and that's the whole process is set up to get that issue addressed. And again, the frustration from applying writs and those writs not being granted, but then ending up in a situation as they were in the Barron case where you didn't get a writ, and now you're here at the end, and you can't show prejudice, so you lose. And it makes the whole requirement of the venue statute and a protection that's supposed to exist, but is blown away in a rather stiff wind.
Thank you very much. All three cases will be submitted. It was well argued on both sides. Mm-hmm. Thank you.